time for your weekly dose of Indiana and U.S. agriculture news and information. It's time for Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, joined as usual by Andy Eubank, CJ Miller, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. Hope you had a safe and happy Independence Day celebration on Thursday, and that those celebrations are extending into the weekend here. Andy will share market news coming up later this segment. We saw a bump coming out of the holiday and into the weekend. Many farmers enjoyed some rain coming down on the 4th of July. If I had a nickel for all the pictures I saw on social media from my farmer friends, just sitting there watching that rain come down on the 4th, I'm not saying I'd be rich, but I am saying I'd have quite a few nickels. Ryan has that Indiana farm forecast coming up in less than 10 minutes, so stick around. In the news, soybeans are already setting pods. Why our Indiana soybean crop is so advanced this year, why you definitely want to put the Purdue Farm Management Tour on your to-do list this year, and the Supreme Court delivers a big win for agriculture by turning its back on the Chevron deference. CJ explains why it's such a big win for ag later on in the show. Let's begin by talking about lost farmland here in Indiana. We know we've been losing it, but we haven't had the numbers to back it up and put any teeth behind that statement. Well, now we do. Back in 2023, the Indiana General Assembly passed House Enrolled Act 1557, tasking the Indiana State Department of Agriculture to complete an inventory of lost farmland in Indiana from 2010 to 2022. ISDA released that data Monday. ISDA Director Don Lamb.
We show that we've lost about 1.89% of our farmland in that time, which is somewhere around 350,000 acres. So it's not an insignificant number, but it's one of those things where what they asked us to do was really come up with a baseline. You know, we make a lot of assumptions about farmland loss, and we look around and we see it going away. So we make assumptions, but we really didn't know what that meant to us in numbers. So that was the goal of this project, was to get that baseline established, and we think we've done that.
ISDA compiled the report using data from the Indiana Department of Local Government Finance and USDA. 2023 data from USDA shows 14.6 million acres of farmland being operated currently in Indiana. Also, unsurprising, Lamb says the primary cause of reduction in farmland was due to residential use.
And if you look at the map of where it is, it's around the urban areas, and you can, you know, we've got some maps that show, you know, the areas that have had the quickest amount of development, that it is, you know, mostly residential as far as taking up land. And of course that follows jobs, it follows businesses. So a business may take up a little bit of the land, and then it takes quite a bit of land in housing to provide the workers for that business. And so as you would expect, around the urban areas is where most of that growth has taken place.
Now, ISDA outlined several recommendations within the report to the Legislative Council, one of those being that legislation be passed directing ISDA to update the inventory of lost farmland every 5 years to have more accurate data. You can read the full report or narrative. There's a link at HoosierAgToday.com. There's also the full hat interview with ISDA Director Don Lamb right there as well. But more on this now.
I would say the data is significant in my mind. We should be concerned as Hoosiers.
That's Republican State Representative Kendall Culp, who represents House District 16 in Northwest Indiana. The Rensselaer farmer authored the bill asking ISDA for the data regarding lost farmland. He put his math skills to the test and says if you divide the number of acres by the size of the average farm in Indiana.
And we're losing 106 farms per year at this rate. That's what that works out to be. And that's substantial too. You know, 94% of Indiana's farms are family farms. So just say 100 of those are going to be family farms that are no longer going to be in existence every year. So these are real people. These are people that are doing business in their local community, that are supporting the food chain. And so it becomes very personal, I think, as we look forward. And again, these numbers do not include renewable energy conversion.
So what's next? Culp says the legislature should all agree that this is a problem that needs a solution, or at least a majority should. Then it's time to start looking for solutions, because this is a food security issue.
If ag is important to our communities, then I think we have to look at not only how can we protect the farmland, but how can we protect the farmer. And so I'm going to be digesting this information on a personal level and coming up with some thoughts and ideas, and I certainly welcome input on that. So how can we protect the farmer? How can we say to them that you're important, that we know that there's a lot of struggles, there's a lot of competition out here for your land, and instead of leasing it for another purpose, possibly, you know, what kind of incentive would it take for you to keep it in production to produce food? I think that's really going to be an important question we're going to have to find an answer to.
Culp throws out some of those potential incentives, and he discusses some of the current issues that are disincentives to farmers right now, like property taxes, in the Full Hat interview. Again, find that and this story at HoosierAgToday.com or in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. If you haven't downloaded that, what are you waiting on? Just search Hoosier Ag Today in your app store. There's more farm news coming up here on the weekend show, and we've got the Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin on the way. Right now, let's talk markets. And for that, we welcome in Andy Eubank.
Thank you, Eric. Of course, we had no markets on Thursday, the 4th of July. Friday was a higher day, a rally across soybeans, corn, wheat futures, and many other commodities as well, with a lower U.S. dollar index. We'll have market analysis first and settlements as well. For that analysis, I checked in middle of the Friday session with Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. Brian, we have a rally, some buying interest in corn, soybeans, and wheat as we head into the weekend and end this holiday shortened week. On a Friday after the 4th of July, are we seeing some low volume, high volatility, or no?
Well, partly, I think so, Andy. A lot of folks are taking an extended weekend, as you said, with the holiday, Independence Day falling on Thursday. So, and a lot of people are just taking some risk off the table, as it were, with pollination really set to accelerate here for corn the next 2 to 3 weeks. And seeing some multi-year lows following that bearish acreage and stock support, the double whammy that you and I talked about last week, taking some money off the table, as it were, with some short covering. We are seeing it. We did see a bit of new crop interest prior to those reports last week in the export sales report. Not stellar interest, but we did see some more new crop bean interest, for example. We had new crop bean sales, 150,000 tons last week. That's not a great number, but at least some interest there. And for corn, we had 300,000 tons prior to the report of new crops. So it looks like some end users, as it were, put their toe in the water. So, yeah, I think we're seeing some end of the week as short covering here.
What kind of weather influences are we looking at on the markets on a Friday, both from the standpoint of the moisture that we're getting and the dryness or the level of dryness that might be in extended forecasts?
I just did the calculation, and on average from July 7th, which is what the USDA will report on Sunday, through July 31st, we have about 2/3 of the corn will pollinate. Again, from July 7th to July 31st, on average, roughly 2/3 of the corn will pollinate. So no question that we're moving into a key time period here. Mixed forecasts, some cooler temperatures here next week, or I should say the coming week, the week of the 8th, but maybe some heat moving in behind that, more of a mixed bag precip-wise. All we can say at this point is that it's day by day. Anything wild cards out there, for example, this hurricane that's moving in through the Gulf may bring some moisture to the southeast, which desperately needs it. Now, some of that corn may be past the point of help, but weather is front burner. There's no other way to say it, Andy.
Analyst Brian Basting, he is an economist with Advanced Trading, and Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Friday settlements now, and the rally continued throughout the session, with September corn ending a nickel higher, going to 410.5. December, 424, a gain of 4.5 cents. March contract, 438, also up 4.5. Over in beans, the August, 1166.25, a gain of 8.5 cents. September up 8.5 to 1126. Novi 1129.75, up 8.25. September wheat 590.5, a pickup of 16.5 cents. August live cattle 186.42, ending the day up $0.5. And the August lean hogs 89.17, down 65. And that's the market update on our weekend show. Much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
As you look at growth for Traxion, you got to do accounting well, but where are the adjacencies? Where do you see opportunity for continued growth beyond accounting today?
You know, our belief is if you can solve accounting and finance right, if you can really provide value there, you then have the opportunity and the right in many ways to bring solutions to those same farmers to help them, you know, continue to improve the operations of their farms, whether that's through work order management, labor management. There are a number of areas that with accounting as that core foundation, if that truly is the gospel data that they can operate off of, there are lots of other areas that we can bring value to them. And that really fueled the couple of acquisitions that we did over the past 18 months.
Subscribe, listen, rate, and review. Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Cooler and less humid air in to start the weekend. Don't get used to it. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook. We're going to be seeing heat and humidity come back likely this week, but the heat is really going to build in, I think, starting next week and going into the end of the month. Let's kind of step through what we see going on here. As we move through the weekend, today and tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny skies, we're cooler behind some of the action that came through to finish the week, and we're going to be seeing slightly less humid. I think we're looking at temperatures being cooler today than tomorrow, so we're going to start to see a warm-up relatively quickly. And then as we get into the Monday-Tuesday time frame, humidity values come right along and race to the upside as well. We are precipitation free for both today and tomorrow, so a nice weekend overall. We start to see some moisture trying to come back in early next week. Monday, we probably escape with little to no activity. If you see anything, it will be late afternoon and evening. But I'm really looking at Tuesday being the day where we can see a round of shower and thunderstorm action, quarter to three quarters of an inch with 80% coverage across the Hoosier State, starting right away Tuesday morning and going through the afternoon. Wednesday should be dry, but Wednesday we also see the remains of Beryl starting to work through east of Texas, arcing through Louisiana, Arkansas, southeastern Oklahoma. Where Beryl goes can have a very big impact on our weather. Right now, I think the remains, for the most part, want to stay a little bit farther south. So that pattern is going to take the moisture through, again, northeast Texas, Arkansas, and then I think right along the southern half of the Ohio Valley. So maybe we see a few showers try and get across the Ohio River into southern Indiana, but the heaviest rain will stay south. Let's be clear. There is a very strong core of heavy precipitation that holds with this. So the boot heel of Missouri can see just absolutely rocking rain activity as we move into the Thursday, Friday time frame next week. And we can see Kentucky get lit pretty good. Moving into the late week and weekend, that moisture will stay just south of the Ohio River, I believe, through Friday into early Saturday. We'll have to watch the track closely, but the rest of the state has a precipitation-free weather through the second half of the week. And then we're also looking at a warmer, drier pattern emerging even after the remains of Beryl go away. But I think the remains of Beryl may stall out over Ohio, and that may circulate some clouds around into the Saturday afternoon and Sunday time frame, the 13th into the 14th. But let's go back to that warmer, drier pattern. Big upper-level ridge over the western third of the country has a lot of hot air with it. That looks to expand late next week and weekend, and I think that's going to come in here and take control for the week of the 15th. We are looking at a lack of a frontal boundary passage over most of the second half of the 10-day forecast window. Only Beryl is triggering moisture. I'm Ryan Martin.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eile Fabrications, made with the best steel, such as Hardox or Strengths wear plate. Eile's steel wear part liners are easy to install and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit at a cost less than OEM replacement parts. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. What, it's the 6th or 7th of July? I still hope you're celebrating the 4th. If anyone deserves a week-long celebration of their birthday, isn't it America? I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today with the latest in Indiana and U.S. farm news. knee-high by the 4th of July. That's what Grandpa always hoped for when watching that corn grow. Until we start growing more of that short-stature corn that may not get much taller than knee-high, I think we've all adjusted our expectations from Grandpa's day. Purdue's Dan Corn Quinn says on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast that most of us would prefer over your head by the 4th of July, but that doesn't quite have the same ring to it, does it? Soybean Sean Castile has been saying for several years, though, now that your beans should be green to the eye by the 4th of July. Now that's got a ring to it. He says as farmers plant soybeans earlier, the accumulated heat units and critical night length that we get before photoperiod pushes us into flowering, taking us from an 18 to 20 trifoliate noted plant to upwards of a 24 noted plant.
Those are just great opportunities for more pod production. Usually that earlier planted crop is more compact, and it is a compact plant this year. So, we talked about we're ahead in terms of stand establishment, emergence, and heat unit accumulation. But when I've been looking at these plants, their internal elongation hasn't been extreme. They've been very tight early on. And what I mean by that, the early ones, quarter, half inch on the lower ones. But usually by nodes 6, 7, 8, 9, we're really stretching out. And they're still, I'd say, a good just 2 inches instead of 3 or 4 inch internodes. And that just gives me an indication, again, okay, we've got a crop that's noting well, but it's not growing really tall, so it's going to be a compact plant. Mm-hmm. It is flowering, so as long as we can get that thing closed, harvest that sunlight, that green to the eye by the 4th of July, so we're maximizing sunlight interception, solar radiation, all that things that we want to do to create the factory to transition to flowers and pods. That's what it's about.
Hear much more from Castile and Quinn in the Purdue Crop Chat on your favorite podcast platform, or just visit HoosierAgToday.com. The annual Purdue Farm Management Tour is coming up, and if you attend this year, they say you'll be touring two of Indiana's most innovative farms. Andy Eubank has the details.
The Purdue Center for Commercial Ag Tour is headed to Randolph County July 17th, followed by the annual Master Farmer Awards presentation. Purdue's Jim Mintert says one common theme at both stops on the tour, the Clements Miller Farm and Union Go Dairy, is how to integrate the next generation into the operation.
It's a challenge financially, and it's a challenge managerially. There's no magic formula, and so one of the things we like to highlight on the Farm Management Tour is how different people have managed to work through the challenges that they face and bringing that next generation into the farm operation.
Rex Clements and Wade Miller have worked for about a decade to improve drainage on the farm. Mintert says they'll have a lot to share about their improvements.
So much of Indiana can benefit from improving drainage, and they're going to highlight how they use technology to identify the need for drainage, how they've gone about actually doing it. And in their case, they actually installed the drainage themselves. They've purchased a self-propelled tile plow and do all the drainage work themselves. So you'll learn a lot about, one, identifying the need for drainage, as well as how they've gone about actually doing it themselves. So I think it'll be a very interesting tour.
Tony and Yvonne Goldstein moved from Europe to start their dairy operation in 2003. Those on the tour will learn a lot about dairy operations, from the challenges to the partnerships.
They'll talk a little bit about the technology they use in their dairy operation. And in particular, they have a strong partnership with Dannon. And they'll talk about how working with Dannon has actually helped them become a better dairy operation so over the years. So you'll learn a little bit about dairy and dairy operations.
The Farm Management Tour and Master Farmer Reception and Panel Discussion are free and open to the public July 17th, but registration is required. There's a website for details and registration. Get that link at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Andy Eubank.
All right, Andy, thanks. The U.S. Supreme Court last week overturned 40 years of legal precedent that gave federal agencies regulatory powers that federal courts had to follow. C.J. Miller reports how some are calling the decision a huge victory for the ag industry.
If we're thinking about long-term impact, I would say this is easily one of the biggest decisions we've gotten from the Supreme Court, at least in the last decade.
And that's Mary Thomas Hart, chief counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Back in 1984, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that federal agencies like USDA, FDA, and EPA
not only had the power to put laws into place without congressional approval, but the power to interpret and rule upon those very laws they issue. That 1984 case has been referred to as the Chevron deference. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Chevron deference, which now gives federal judges the ability to call the shots instead of the agencies themselves. Hart says the Chevron deference allowed the EPA to reinterpret the WOTUS statute 14 different times until the Supreme Court finally stepped in.
Every time we got a new president, every time we got a new set of priorities, that definition changed and the features that were on your property changed. It significantly affected the cost of compliance, cost of maintaining your own private property, and that is directly a product of Chevron deference.
Travis Cushman with American Farm Bureau says they were thrilled with the Supreme Court's decision and that it puts Congress, instead of unelected bureaucrats, back into the driver's seat.
So many regulations that we believe that whether it's USDA, EPA, labor, push the bounds of what Congress intended. And this will force those agencies to really evaluate how much authority they have to regulate and allow us to challenge them when they've gone too far.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. I'm CJ Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. If you haven't downloaded that app yet, what are you waiting on? Just go to your app store and search Hoosier Ag Today. CJ Miller takes you the rest of the way here on the Weekend Show when we return on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Podcasts are everywhere today. But how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture, farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and you've been hearing a lot lately about biosecurity and traceability because of foreign animal diseases impacting the livestock industry. That's why there's a tool that's available for those in the pork industry.
It's an online platform that brings the capabilities of tracking movements of pigs.
And that's Chad Martin, Director of Strategic Outreach with Indiana Pork, talking about AgView. And that platform is free for pork producers.
It will allow us to identify where a pig individually or as a group of pigs in a shipment have been brought from and where they're headed to thereafter and how much time they've spent in all those different locations.
AgView is supported by the National Pork Board and funded by the Pork Checkoff. And with the busy show pig season underway, including the Indiana State Fair in August, Martin says the platform can provide real-time health status updates, plus site and pig movement data from participating farms to state animal health officials in the event that there's a confirmed case of a foreign animal disease among swine in the U.S.
So if you think about the journey of a show pig from California, they may have stopped at a couple of different locations as a resting place and maybe co-mingled at a show here and there between then and getting to the exposition. If we can monitor those movements, we can better able to understand where those disease pressures are located, where to contain those diseases, and then eventually hopefully eradicate them before they spread.
Learn more about the AgView platform at agview.com. You can also find that link at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. Well, there's a young student from Hancock County who is already using her passion for agriculture to bring awareness to the mental health issues facing farmers.
And it truly is something that is important and needs to be talked about, especially in the agriculture industry.
And that's Emily Grant from Charlottesville, who recently graduated from Eastern Hancock High School. She'll be a freshman this fall at Purdue. Emily has created a social media page on Facebook and Instagram called The Whole Farmer. It focuses on the mental, physical, and social well-being of our farmers. She says she was inspired while serving as a member of Indiana FFA.
I wanted to focus on the mental health crisis that is currently happening in the agriculture industry. So I initially started by going to WLC, which is the Washington Leadership Conference. So I went to that and I created a Living to Serve plan. So I came home, created my social media platform.
Emily says she wants farmers to know that they can open up about the stress they're facing by talking about it with someone they trust.
I initially was drawn to this because I do have people in the community that I know, family, friends that are farmers, and really does take a toll on them. And I've seen firsthand what it truly can do. And when you have too many irons in the fire and it's planting season and you have cattle and you have everything else to worry about and your family, it truly does bring a stress on everything you're doing.
You can check out Emily's social media sites for The Whole Farmer on Facebook and Instagram. You can also find those links at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. And you hear much less of him now because he's quote-unquote retired, but for years he brought you farm news and information on your radio and television. This fellow Hoosier started his farm broadcasting journey in Southwest Indiana.
We understate, underappreciate Hoosier hospitality. The people of this state are so genuine, so kind.
And that's Max Armstrong, who recently retired after 48 years in farm broadcasting. Growing up near Owensville in Gibson County, Max says his love of listening to AM radio stations across the U.S. is what led to his career path in farm broadcasting.
You know, I was just so fortunate to grow up on a farm in Gibson County and to be born into a farm family, a community that cared about us, a church community that, you know, was so welcoming too, and to be able to live my dream of wanting to be on the radio, you know. And I think, you know, many of us have walked down that path. As we were kids, we wanted to be on the radio, and for me to be able to do it over all of these years has really been a blessing.
After graduating from Purdue, Max was hired by WGN Radio and Television in Chicago and worked with fellow farm broadcaster Orion Samuelson for more than 35 years. Even though Max retired at the end of last year, he says he still has a passion for both broadcasting and the farm community.
That's why I try to stay engaged to some extent, going to various major events where farmers are present. But that's the joy of it, as you know, as you guys have been so close to farmers up and down this state and sharing their story. It's that personal contact. And you know, you're driving down the road and you look over there and you say, oh yeah, I was over there at George's place a few years ago. Oh yeah, Mary and Adam live over here. There's something pretty neat about that. As farm broadcasters, we've been at the kitchen table. We've been in the cab. We've been with them in the barn. And there's something very special about that.
You can hear much more from Max Armstrong at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, we sign off on another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.